Hello, everyone. Welcome. Hello. Thank you for coming along. My name is Brian Reid, and this session we're going to be looking at transport to Office 365 for SMTP. We're going to look at all the things that you need to know to integrate your on-premise Exchange deployments, partner deployments, antivirus and spam configurations with Office 365. Okay. Ideal for people who are planning to move to Office 365. Great for customers who are already there. It'll help you understand how to make sure that when you move tens of thousands, millions of mailboxes to the cloud, you can actually send them email, and they can send email back to you. Okay. Obviously, a desirable place to be. Okay. So we'll have a look at the different scenarios there are for mail flow in Office 365 and on-premise. Okay. That's related to the migration of mailbox scenarios, but we'll see what they are just from the SMTP viewpoint. Okay. We'll have a look at how you test mail flow to make sure it's working. We'll have a look at the connectors and the routes and routing that you need to make to ensure that works. Some of those are optional. Some of those are required. Some of those are made by the Office 365 wizards. Some of those you'd have to consider by hand and maybe put them in. We'll have a look at what happens when and how you change mail flow endpoint. So if you're a customer who's or a consultant and you've got a company and they're moving to the cloud and they're all in and they're going to move all of Exchange to the cloud, there is at some point you'll probably change their MX record. Do you do it before you start? Do you do it at the end? Do you do it in the middle? How can you decide what to consider about that? Okay. If you have compliance reasons, journaling and stuff like that, how to make sure your mail flow remains compliant in that, and also if you have regional requirements for mail flow. And I know that's an issue in when you move things to the cloud, where actually is my mail and where will it go? That can be important as well. Okay. And we'll finish off with a slide on considering the decommissioning of on-premise Exchange. If you are getting rid of on-premise Exchange, how do you know it's safe to do so? How do you know you have no mail flow still going through it that's important to do? Okay. So let's start with our mail flow scenarios. Okay. And in this, we're going to look at staged, hybrid, and EOP, or Exchange Online Protection, only mail flow. We'll also, it's nothing to do with your environment, but your partner mail flow. So you have mail from a business partner or an organization that you need to have high security with. How can you guarantee that with another company? Okay. So partner mail flow and how you can set that up. So the first three are sort of mail inbound and outbound from your organization and to anybody. Okay. And the last one is to specific people. Okay. So let's start with staged mail flow. Call it staged mail flow. It's based on the idea of the staged mailbox migration. So Exchange 2003 and 2007 on-premise endpoints. You can do a staged migration. Okay. You put dirsync in place and you move people to the cloud on your speed. Okay. I haven't covered the cutover migration, which is you just, you know, one day you go like that and we're there. Okay. In that, you do change your endpoint and you're done, really, from an SMTP viewpoint. Okay. So it wasn't interesting to cover. But from a staged mail flow migration, there's a number of things that you need to put in place to start with. And some of those things to consider are the domains that you have in place. So first of all, you've got your tenant in Office 365. You need to register and verify all the accepted domains that you have on-premise. Okay. If you have an object on-premise that you've manually added an email address to, okay, Exchange will accept email for that email address if MX Routing takes that domain to that server. If you then try and move that mailbox to the cloud, and in Office 365 you haven't registered that domain, that mailbox move will fail. Okay. So it's all your accepted domains. That's not just when you go get accepted domain. It's all the domains you may possibly have stamped against all your attributes, which should be your accepted domains, but it may not be. Okay. Add them to Office 365 and verify them. Okay. That places them in Exchange Online. Okay. And it puts them in Exchange Online as accepted domains. That means Exchange will receive email for them. Okay. If you don't verify them as a domain, Office 365, Exchange Online will not receive email for it and the message will get rejected. Okay. So that's your first thing to do. Okay. You do not need to create the tenant email address, the mail.onmicrosoft.com address. That will be made for you. And you can't really customize that one, but that one will be there as well. Okay. As it's a staged migration, that you're doing, you need to have DirSync in place. Okay? That's probably the biggest bit of this. It's getting your Active Directory up and working and making sure that it's clean enough that you can stream it up to the cloud. So DirSync or AAD Sync, whichever your preference is. Okay? Although yesterday it was announced that AAD Sync now does password sync. So it's probably AAD Sync from this point onwards. Okay. Install your synchronization software to the cloud, and that will copy your objects on-premise to Azure Active Directory, and it will stamp a number of attributes for them. Okay? It will stamp email addresses on your mailboxes for you. Now, the way DirSync works for Exchange Online is on-premise Active Directory is copied to Azure Active Directory in the cloud, and Azure Active Directory, your tenant information, is then copied to the Exchange Online directory. Exchange Online has its own directory. It's not the Azure Active Directory. So there's two syncs going on. DirSync to Azure is every 3 hours by default. You can override that, but that's the default. And then the sync between Azure Active Directory and Exchange Online's directory is fairly quick. Okay? So much so you don't tend to notice it. But that's an important one. Okay, your mailbox, you may have done a DirSync to Azure. You may find that the object doesn't turn up in Exchange Online for a short while later. Okay? But when that object turns up in Exchange Online, the object will have an email address associated with it. Now, initially, it's going to be all the email addresses of the object on-premise, and initially, it's going to be a mail user, but I'll come to that. Okay. Also, it will be good to make sure the certificate you've got is valid for Mailflow. Now, if you're going to do a staged migration, you're going to be doing Outlook anywhere, it's going to be a third-party certificate. It's going to be trusted by Office 365, and they'll do HTTPS, Outlook Anywhere connectivity to pull mailboxes up to the cloud. If you use the same certificate for SMTP Mailflow, you can do things in a staged migration to ensure TLS migration, TLS Mailflow. Okay? By default, you don't really need to do a lot to make Mailflow work in a staged migration. But if you have a certificate in place, you can start doing things like enforced TLS. We'll come back to that later. But that's something you can make use of. It's not required, but it's something you can do. Okay. So that's the stuff you put in place, and then you're ready to go. You're ready to move your mailboxes. Okay. Now, before you move your mailboxes, you want to make sure that when you move that first mailbox, you're going to be able to email them. Okay. So things that you would do at this point would be test you have Mailflow to the cloud. Now, Mailflow to Office 365 for your on-premise objects that you move to the cloud will not be using your domain name. It'll be using your tenant domain name, tenant name, so let's say Contoso, you sign up, you say you're Contoso, and it asks you for a name, and you give that name. Contoso.mail.onmicrosoft.com. Okay? That will be the address space to which the message is routed to the cloud. Okay? So assuming no other changes, okay, mail comes into on-premise, and it finds a mailbox, and it delivers it. Fine. You move that mailbox to the cloud. What happens is, when you do a staged migration, the on-premise object has an attribute changed on it. It's the target address attribute. And the mailbox is moved to the mailbox is copied to the cloud, a mailbox is left on-premise. That mailbox has an attribute called target address. You don't see it on a mailbox by default, but if you go into Active Directory Advanced or you go into ANSI Edit, you can see the target address attribute. And the target address attribute is stamped with the user's alias at your tenantname.mail.onmicrosoft.com. Now, any object that has the target address attribute set will cause Exchange to reroute and redeliver messages to it. So before your migration, the mail would come in via MX to the on-premise server and would be delivered to the mailbox database that contained that mailbox. As soon as the target address attribute is stamped, rather than Exchange delivering it to the mailbox, Exchange will re-deliver it. So now it will deliver it to tenantname.mail.onmicrosoft.com. So as long as you have a valid route from your on-premise server to that domain, Mailflow should work. Now, what do I mean by a valid route? Okay. You probably will have an outbound connect or a send connector for star. Okay. It will go out the send connector for star because that's the best send connector you've got. Okay. You may want to consider putting a send connector in specifically for that address space, specifically to your EOP endpoint in Office 365. Okay. Why would you want to do that? Well, maybe because your internet routing goes through some third-party device or a cloud environment that filters your mail. Okay. You may not want mail, let's say, comes in via a third-party filter into on-premise, back out to third-party filter, up to Office 365. Okay? You may want to go direct to Office 365. Treat Office 365 as another branch office of your organization, effectively, which is how it's sort of set up to be. Okay, so you can set that, make sure that you can route to that address space, okay, and custom routing if you want to. In Office 365, you may want to, and highly recommend this, you want to make your IP address range safe for sending email to, for that address space. So you either go into EOP and add an IP address and say this IP address is to be safe. So when an email comes from on-premise to Office 365 from your IP address range, EOP will not treat it as spam. Okay? You want mail, people on-premise who send you email, you don't want that ending up in junk mail or quarantine. You want it straight into your mailbox. That's where it should go. Okay? So mark your on-prem IP addresses as safe. And of course, if you're sending email via some third-party cloud filter, you don't want to mark their IP addresses as safe, because then anybody else who uses that third-party cloud filter is not junk, as far as you're concerned. So if you can go direct to Office 365 rather than via some third-party filter, that's an ideal place to be. Or, and this is an optional one, if you were doing hybrid, it would do this for you. Or you can create an inbound connector in Office 365. Okay? You create an inbound connector, you say the type of connector is a partner connector, sorry, not partner, on-premise connector, and that says that if email comes from the settings that this inbound connector is configured with, then to treat that email as safe. Okay? And within that inbound connector, you can do things like, if it comes from this IP address range, treat it as safe. Or better still, if it comes from a server that's got this digital certificate on it, treat it as safe. Okay? And that's where you can do the TLS settings. Okay. It's then time to move mailboxes. Okay? So you move a mailbox to the cloud, and as long as you've got outbound routing, that's going to work, okay, from on-premise. Well, what about them coming back? Okay. Well, if they come back, it's probably going to go back via your MX record, okay, and come in again, which means it's going to go through your third-party filtering service, possibly. Okay. You may also want to consider, in a staged migration, a direct route back again. That's a little bit more contentious for most security consultants. They're like, oh, no, you can't open your Exchange servers direct to the internet. Okay. And that's probably why you've got a third-party filtering service in there in the first place. But in this scenario, again, you remember you've moved some people in your organization to Office 365. They're still in your organization. They're still internal mailboxes. The fact that you don't host them on your servers anymore, they're still internal. Okay? And so maybe you want to make sure that the mail routing between them is direct. Okay? And so you may want to open your firewalls to the published range of IP addresses for EOP and then set an outbound connector so that mail flow to your organization's domain from EOP goes direct. Okay. And that will go from your tenant direct, not from anybody else in EOP who happens to email you, because the outbound connector won't be valid for them, but it'll be valid for you. So you can control mail flow between your organization or inside your organization. Okay. And with that outbound connector, okay, you need to set as the endpoint the IP address or the smart host of your server on-prem. Okay. Try not to use your MX record, because at some point, you're going to change your MX record probably. So imagine a scenario where you've got some users in the cloud, some on-premise, and you're routing mail from the cloud to on-premise via MX record. And then you decide, time to point MX to Office 365, and you're relying on the MX record. Suddenly, all mail flow from the cloud to on-premise stops because it's going around in a loop. Okay? It's leaving EOP, going to MX, back into EOP. EOP says, oh, that's on-premise, back out to MX, back into EOP, and it never gets anywhere. Okay. So try and avoid relying on your MX record for cloud, your tenant mailbox delivery to on-premises. Okay. Outlook Anywhere is then used to move the mailboxes, and Outlook Anywhere will stamp the target address for you. It's one of the first things it does. So you start a move mailbox, okay, one or 100 or whatever number you start. When Office 365 picks up that move request, when Exchange Online picks up that move request, over the Outlook Anywhere protocol to Exchange 2003 and 2007, the first thing it will do is it will make the object that it holds for that user in the cloud from a mail user object to a mailbox object. Once the object in the cloud is a mailbox into which it can load data, it connects to on-premises and writes the target address value to the on-premise object over Outlook Anywhere. This is why you cannot use a staged migration for Exchange 2010. Outlook Anywhere in Exchange 2010 does not allow updating the Active Directory via the Outlook Anywhere protocol. So you have to use hybrid mode for Exchange 2010 on-premise, okay, because you can't use the target address update attribute. Okay. So 2007 and 2003 on-premise, Outlook Anywhere will write the target address value for you. And as soon as that value is written, all new mail to that mailbox will follow MX routing onto on-premise and immediately be forwarded to the cloud. It will not stop at the mailbox. And from that point onwards, the mailbox is then migrated to the cloud. But all new inbound email goes straight to the cloud mailbox, straight via on-premise, straight to the cloud mailbox. Okay. And that's written there on the slide for a bit more detail. Okay. And so the route follows internet, your MX record, on-premise server, Exchange Online, the Exchange Online mailbox. Okay. Outbound from that new mailbox, that will vary. Probably outbound, unless you've changed the connectors, but default outbound from this new mailbox to the internet will be straight from Office 365 to the internet. Okay. So you, in fact, have two outbound routes to the internet. You have your on-premise mailboxes delivering as they always have delivered to the internet. You have your Office 365 mailboxes delivering direct to the internet as well. So if you have an SPF record, you'll need to make sure your SPF record includes both environments as valid senders of your mail. Okay? Otherwise, your on-premise users won't get checked for spam by some people, but your Office 365 mailboxes will be marked as spoof because they'll fail an SPF check. Okay? So you need to make sure you've got that record set. Okay. Or you create an outbound connector, and you can route all mail on-premise and then out to the cloud. Okay? And we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. Okay? But they're your outbound routes by default. Okay. So here's a little graphic to show us what's going on here. Okay. So this is MX to on-premise, so probably what you had before you started. Okay. A staged migration. We've got a user on-premise. Okay. User one at contoso.com, and they have a mailbox. Okay, that's what they had at the start. They had a mailbox. Okay, we start the migration. The mailbox gets stamped with target address, and so it's alias at tenantname.mail.microsoft.com. Okay, so an email comes in from the internet, or an email comes from somebody on-premise. Okay, same idea. It arrives at the on-premise Exchange server, and on the on-premise Exchange server, the transport component sees there's a target address and sees that the message needs to be rerouted to user1 at contoso.mail.onmicrosoft.com. So it directs it either via your default outbound connector or via that connector we talked about a moment ago we specifically put in place. Okay? But it will pick the best connector. So if you have a connector for that address space, it will always pick that over a connector that says star. A connector with a more specific name will always be picked over a connector that's just generic for star. Okay? So it's an optional on-premises send connector. If it's there, it'll use it. And that will deliver that to Exchange Online Protection. All inbound and outbound email from Office 365 goes via Exchange Online Protection. Okay. And that's why you need safe list and so on, your IP address range in Exchange Online Protection. So up it goes to Office 365. On arrival, it goes through EOP. It's been safe listed, so it goes straight through EOP. That's fine. And then we see that there's a mailbox in the cloud for that user. And that user will have the same email address in the cloud. There's no change of email address in the cloud because DirSync has pushed up those email address attributes. So same email address in the cloud. Okay, and they'll have multiple email addresses. They'll have their email address they had before, user1 at contoso.com, and they'll also have the routing address. Because remember, this email that's going via on-premises is going to the routing address. But the original email address has in the email, the proxy address property in Azure Active Directory has a capital SMTP. That means that's the sending address. So the user has moved to the cloud. They now have multiple email addresses, but they will still be sending from the same email address they've always been sending from. But they get this extra email address as the routing address. Okay. So that's the stage migration. Okay. Let's say you change your MX record. Some point in the deployment, you move your MX record. MX is now pointing to Exchange Online Protection. Okay. The email arrives, comes into Office 365. Again, you have to do DirSync. DirSync is in place. It's a requirement of a staged migration. So on-premise, we have a mailbox, and it's user2 at contoso.com. Okay. They'll have an email address. Okay. DirSync will push that object to the cloud as well. Okay. So in the cloud, there'll be a mail user of the same properties. Okay? So it'll have, but it'll, as it's a mail user, i.e. in effect a contact, it's a mail user, it will have the target address of the on-premise address. Okay? So there's no routing address inbound. Okay? It uses your normal domain to route inbound. Okay? And so an email arrives in Office 365. Office 365 sees there's a mail user for that object. It's a valid object. Okay? And contoso.com is a registered domain, so it'll accept that email. It's an authoritative domain. Okay? And so it will find an outbound connector if there's one valid. If there isn't one valid, it will send it to your MX endpoint. And that's what he said we want to try and avoid. Okay? So it looks for an outbound connector matching your address space with the endpoint, your on-premise IP address range. Okay? So it'll send it down that connector where it arrives on premises, where there's a valid mailbox for the user, and so the message will be delivered. So it doesn't matter if I have on-premise MX-bound delivery or I have Office 365 first MX-bound delivery. Okay? DirSync means I've got my objects in both places. Now, where are some of the troubleshooting problems you could have with this? Typically, they're down to DirSync. If your directory is not clean, if there's duplicate items, if there's problems with the way objects have been written in the AD, you may find you've got duplicates, and DirSync will not push duplicates to the cloud. Okay. Got a question? Yeah.
You spoke before about how you populate the target address on premise to make it forward to the cloud. Who populates the target address in the cloud to make it forward back?
Okay, so the question was, who populates the target address in the cloud to populate back? DirSync. Okay. When you DirSync the object up, a mail user object is made for you, and the target address object of the mail user is your email address, your primary email address in the cloud. Sorry, on-premise. Okay. So that's done for you. Okay. That's automatic. But that's where the troubleshooting issue comes. If DirSync's not working, you might have a scenario. Let's say you had duplicate user 2. There was two of them. So DirSync runs, user 2 doesn't get pushed to the cloud. Okay. You don't notice or whatever you think. You don't think it's important. I've had that with a customer. Okay. And you change MX to on-premise to the cloud. There's now no user 2 object in the cloud. So there's no acceptable object for the receipt of that email. Because remember, the contoso.com domain is made as an authoritative domain when it's verified in Office 365. An authoritative domain means that the object must exist to receive the message. So if user 2 does not exist, Office 365 will not accept the email. So when your MX pointed on-premise, it worked. But when your MX points to Office 365, suddenly you're generating NDRs for this user. And it's because the DirSync object hasn't been, the object hasn't been created by DirSync. And a way around that is to change your accepted domain in the cloud to internal relay. An internal relay domain means if the object exists in the cloud, deliver it to it. But if the object does not exist, find a connector and send it down that connector. Okay? And that's a good reason for creating your own outbound connector. Because you specifically said, here's a route to contoso.com. Okay? So in comes an email. It's an your accepted domain for contoso.com in the cloud is internal relay. User 2 does not exist because DirSync has failed for some reason. Okay? Or indeed, DirSync takes 3 hours and it hasn't yet been made. You know, the user's just joined and immediately emails have been sent to them by cloud users. Okay? And so the object doesn't exist. Rather than it being rejected, it will say, okay, the object doesn't exist, but I have a connector for that address space. I will send the object down the connector. What you don't want to do is set the accepted domain for contoso.com on-premise also to internal relay. Because otherwise you'll get, when the object doesn't exist, go back again, and you'll end up with a loop. Okay? So somewhere the accepted domain must be authoritative. But if you have it as authoritative in both environments, then you must have objects for everything. Okay? Where that becomes the biggest issue is public folders, mail-enabled public folders. DirSync does not push to the cloud mail-enabled public folder email addresses. There are scripts to do it, but DirSync does not do it. So if you have mail-enabled public folders on-premise and you change MX to the cloud, you'll find your mail-enabled public folders will NDR unless you set your domain to internal relay. And it will send them to on-premise because it doesn't know about them, and then they will get delivered. Okay. So there's a few ways around that, which you either make sure that the object exist in the cloud or set it to internal relay. Okay. All right. Hybrid mail flow. Exchange 2010, 2013 on-premise. Okay? You build a hybrid server, or you take your existing server and run the hybrid configuration wizard on it. What's the difference here compared to staged? Well, apart from the fact it makes all the connectors for you, there's actually not a huge amount of difference. Because okay? You could do a staged migration and build all this. In fact, some of the scenarios we've just discussed were building connectors. Hybrid will do it for you. Okay? But the reason why you have to use hybrid if you're 2010 or 2013 is because the target address attribute is not stamped okay? And during in the Outlook Anywhere migration, but it is stamped in the remote move mailbox migration, which is the mailbox, the remote move mailbox migration is what you use for hybrid. So when you move a mailbox in hybrid, a new move request, okay, it will stamp the target address for you. So mail flow is exactly the same. It comes on-premise, it sees the target address, it forwards it to the cloud. It's just the fact that you can't write the target address with Outlook Anywhere, you write it with a remote move request, that means you can't use a staged migration with 2010 and 2013. You have to use a hybrid migration. Okay. So you run the hybrid configuration wizard, and of course you get other things with the hybrid wizard like free busy lookup and centralized GAL and all that sort of stuff as well. Okay. But from the mail flow perspective, okay, you get some connectors. You get connectors outbound created for you, so send connectors on-premise. You get inbound connectors in Office 365 created for you. Now, in Office 365, the connectors are known as inbound and outbound connectors. They're named relative to the direction of the service. So it's inbound connectors are inbound to Office 365, and outbound connectors are outbound from Office 365. Okay? It's not relative to your environment on-premise. They're more important. The more important environment, tongue-in-cheek, inbound to the service and outbound from the service. Okay. So, Hybrid Wizard will make send connectors to send to Exchange Online Protection. It will make inbound connectors that match that. They're a matching pair of connectors. Okay. The outbound send connectors on-premise will use a certificate. Now, if it's Exchange 2010, they'll pick the best certificate. Okay. They'll just look through all the certificates. They'll prefer third party over self-signed and so on. They'll pick the best certificate. They'll pick one that's in date rather than one that's not. Okay. In Exchange 2010, you can't say, use this certificate, unless you only have one certificate. Okay? You can't say, use this certificate. In Exchange 2013, you can. So a send connector in Exchange 2013 will specifically say, here's the send connector, and here is the certificate you must use. And in the cloud, in the inbound connector in EOP, it will say, accept email from any connection that specifically uses this certificate. Okay. So you know that your mail flow between you and Exchange Online is going to be treated as internal. They treat the two environments as part of your organization. It's a sort of a cross-forest exchange organization, if you want, is really what it is. Mail flow into your organization from your organization on-premise can only happen if this connector is valid. If the connector is not valid, if the certificate expires or you lose the certificate or something else, or you put a third-party device in the way and it doesn't offer the certificate, then the inbound connector will not receive email from your outbound send connector, and mail will queue. Okay. If your certificate expires, mail will queue. Okay. The usual fix for that is your certificate expires, you put a new one in place, you run the hybrid connector wizard again, and it will update the hybrid configuration, although you could just go into the send connector and change the name, the string that identifies the certificate it's going to use. And you do that on the inbound connector as well. So at both ends, you tie connectors. You can do this for staged migration. And back in the staged migration, we talked about using an IP address. The problem with using an IP address is it may not always be yours. You know, you change your internet provider, you got a new bunch of IP addresses, you go and add them to your EOP connection, somebody else gets your old IP address, and maybe they're sending email to you, and suddenly they're treated as safe. So treating inbound mail as safe by IP address is not preferred, because it can be spoofed, it can be owned by somebody else. But treating email inbound to Office 365 as safe because it comes from your server with your certificate is a much better way of doing it. Okay? So in Exchange, it's called certificate attribution, and you can do that in 2013. Okay. So if you look in your connectors in Exchange Online and Exchange On-Premise after the hybrid wizard, this is a property you'll see. it'll tell you what connector it's going to use. Okay? And then outbound, it'll be an outbound connector from EOP for your domain name. And then on-premise, there'll be a receive connector. If it's 2010, you have to make a receive connector to receive from EOP. If it's 2013, it's already built in, so there's no additional receive connector. The default receive connector works. Okay. So send connector with a matching inbound connector in the cloud, an outbound connector in the cloud with a matching receive connector, which may or may not be the default one. Okay. And that does mail flow between it. Notice there's no other device between those. It's not supported to have a third-party SMTP gateway or filter between your on-premise environment and Office 365. Okay. Main reasons for that, one is the certificates may not work, but you can always make that work. The second reason is to keep the mail flow treated as internal, the headers that Exchange on-premise adds to the message must remain intact on arrival at Office 365. If those headers do not remain intact, Exchange treats it as an anonymous email. And if it's an anonymous email, it can be subject to spam filtering and quarantining, and it won't do free busy lookups and so on. It won't treat the email as an internal email. Okay. So make sure your mail flow on-premise to the cloud is direct between Exchange servers. If you have an environment that insists on having an SMTP filter in the DMZ, that's what Edge server is designed for. Okay. Because you can do hybrid via an Edge server. Okay. And then you do your Exchange mailbox service to your Edge to the cloud, and back again. And your connectors sit on the Edge server instead of on the on-premise servers. Okay. All right. So you then have your mail flow exactly the same as staged. Okay. You have mailboxes on-premise. You have mail users in the cloud. You move a mailbox. Okay. Unlike a staged migration, when you move a mailbox in a hybrid environment, the mailbox in the cloud becomes a mailbox, and it makes the on-premise object become a mail user. Okay. It changes the object type on-premise as well. A staged migration will not change the on-premise object after the move. So in a staged migration, post-move, you end up with two mailboxes. Mailbox on-premise, which you're not using anymore, because mail flow is not stopping there, and you have a mailbox in the cloud. The problem with that scenario in staged is that the user could still log into their on-premise mailbox, but that's not their definitive mailbox anymore. So there are scripts available online to convert a mailbox to a mail user on-premises, so the user can't log into their old mailbox now online. Sorry, old mailbox on-premises. In a hybrid environment, it does that for you. When you complete the move, it converts the mailbox on-premise to a mail user, and it's already got a mailbox in the cloud. And now AutoDiscover will point the user at their cloud mailbox as the definitive copy of their mailbox. And indeed, the target address attribute is what AutoDiscover uses to route the user to the correct mailbox as well. Okay. In hybrid, though, although I've just described it as a mail user, if you go get mail user, it will just show you your contacts. Your mailboxes in the cloud in hybrid mode are known as remote mailboxes. Okay? But they are, to all intents and purposes, a mail user. Okay? It's an attribute that's set that says it's a remote mailbox, but a remote mailbox is just another mail user. It has a target address attribute, and mail routing happens by it. If you bring up Exchange Management Shell, you can see the target address in your remote mailbox. There we go. It's called the remote routing address in PowerShell, but it's really the target address attribute in AD. Up in the cloud, you'll have a mail user object for all the objects you've yet to migrate. And so up in the cloud, they'll have the external email address property in PowerShell, but it is the target address attribute. So the target address attribute controls all mail flow to the other side. It's just it's never called target address in remote PowerShell or in PowerShell or in Exchange Management Shell. It's always called or external email address or remote routing address or whatever. If you have a mailbox, you will never see this value. The only way to see target address from a mailbox is to open up ADSI Edit and query it using ADSI. Okay. All right. So target address mail flow routing, exactly the same as staged. No different there. Okay. In fact, I've got a picture, which is a good way to do that one. Okay. So MX to on-premise hybrid this time. Okay. And we're going to see it's almost exactly the same as staged. Okay. Only difference here is when I've moved the user to the cloud, so user one has been moved to the cloud, there are a mailbox in the cloud, they've got their original email address, capital SMTP as we discussed earlier, they've got their routing address, which is automatically stamped for them by the dirsync process. Okay. The connectors are made, So unlike staged, where we recommend them, but they're not necessarily there. Okay, they're made. Okay, and therefore, and on premise, rather than the user being a mailbox or possibly a mail user if you've run the scripts, once the move is complete, it becomes a remote mailbox. Okay. So MX to on premise, mail arrives on premise. It sees there's an object in the on premise directory for that email address. It sees there's a remote routing address for that object on premise, which is the target address, and so it reroutes it. And this is the important bit. This must go direct to Office 365. This is the bit that's not supported to go through some third-party email SMTP gateway. Okay. So it finds the connector. Unlike staged, which was optional, the connector will exist. And the connector will have a bunch of settings on them. One of the settings will be, use this certificate and send mail using that certificate. It will arrive at Office 365, where Office 365 will see it coming with a certain certificate encrypting it, and we'll see in the inbound connector in Office 365, it will see a required TLS property of true on the connector, and it will have a TLS sender certificate name. So this is in the inbound connector on premise, and the TLS sender certificate name attribute of the inbound connector will read your issuer name followed by the subject name of the certificate. Therefore, if you change your issuer, or you, let's say you had a certificate for 3 years, and then you did hybrid, and then 6 months after you did hybrid, you went and renewed the certificate with that issuer. Just because 3 years ago, the issuer was called, let's say, GoDaddy, there's no guarantee now it's called GoDaddy. In fact, it's not. If you bought it 3 years ago, it was GoDaddy, and now it's GoDaddy V2 or something like that. They've changed the name of the issuer in the last 3 years. So you ran hybrid, let's say, 6 months ago, then you renewed your certificate. You put your certificate on the server, all's well and good. You had 30 days left because you didn't want to let your certificate expire. And then 30 days goes by, the certificate does expire, and all mail flow stops. The reason? Because now Exchange will not use the expired certificate. It will not accept the expired certificate, but it says the old issuer name and the subject. But that certificate is now invalid. So inbound Office 365 will stop mail flow, because the certificate has to be valid, the certificate must be trusted, it must not be revoked, it must be in date, it must match the string. Okay. So it's a recommendation that when you upgrade your, when you change your certificates, you rerun the hybrid configuration wizard, or at the very least, you change this property to match, both in your outbound send connector on 2013, because it doesn't exist as a 2010 property, and certainly on your inbound connector in Office 365. Okay. And then you know, you've got 30 days before your certificate expires, you're all well and good, and it's done. That's a common issue. I've seen it a number of times. Okay. The connector type is on-premise, so it will be treated as an on-premises email. It will not be checked for spam but EOP. Okay. And the connector has the lovely name of inbound from long GUID. Okay. The outbound connector is much nicer. It's called outbound to Office 365. But the inbound connector has an unreadable name. The email arrives in Office 365, and it gets given to the user who owns that mailbox. Some point later, you'll change, or you might change, your inbound routing to point to Exchange Online Protection. Okay. You point your MX record at tenantname.mail.protection.outlook.com, okay, and it will turn up in Office 365. Okay. For an on-premises user, well, as long as DirSync works, and you know, this is exactly the same as staged we did a few minutes ago. Okay. So there's a mail user in the cloud, there's a mailbox on-premise, but the only difference between stage is you definitely have a connector. Okay? You don't have to have a connector with stage, and the connector will be tied to a certificate, and your inbound connector will only accept from Office 365 with their certificate. So if you have a certificate issue, then mail will queue. Okay? When you fix the certificate, mail will then flow again. Okay. But you are guaranteed with hybrid that mail flow between you and Office 365 in either direction is encrypted. With a stage migration, you're not guaranteed that unless you put the connectors in place. Okay. All right. So mail comes in. It's a mail user. It has a target address. It finds, and the target address is to your domain. Okay? And so it'll deliver the email down the connector that matches that address space. Okay. And it arrives. Okay. So your mail flow will work. Okay. What happens if you have inbound via a third-party service? Okay. Fine, keep your inbound mail via your third-party service, just don't route your internal emails between Exchange Online and Exchange On-Premises via the same third-party service. Treat, and it's an important way of looking at it, treat your mailboxes in Office 365 the same as you treat your mailboxes on-premises. You wouldn't send an email, in fact, again, it's not supported, you wouldn't send an email from one mailbox server in Exchange Online, sorry, in Exchange On-Premises, to another mailbox server in Exchange On-Premises via Mimecast, Message Labs, some other third-party company, naming the two I've worked with recently, but there's lots of them. Okay. You wouldn't do that for two on-premises mailboxes. You don't do that when you're routing between your cloud mailboxes and your on-premises mailboxes. Okay. Treat them as part of your same organization. You're just not looking after the servers anymore, but you're still looking after the mailboxes. Okay. Now, you may well, almost certainly, be sending emails to other people, other companies and other organizations who are in Office 365 as well. You don't have connectors for those other organizations, so mail flow to them will go out via your third-party filter, as it always has done, and will follow their MX record inbound to Office 365. Now, when it comes in to them for Office 365, it's not treated as an internal email. It's treated as an external email. Office 365 knows that the email didn't come from your specific send connector that was sending to the cloud. It came anonymously. It's treated anonymously. It's subject to spam filtering and quarantine and so on. Okay. So it doesn't affect your mail flow to anybody else who happens to be on Office 365. Okay. In the Wizard 4 hybrid, you can expand an option in the transport page, and you can set a thing called centralized mail flow. Okay. Now, centralized mail flow is not recommended. Okay. It makes you need much more internet pipe and stuff like that and more management to make things work. But centralized mail flow works on the idea that all outbound email from Exchange Online goes via Exchange On-Premises. Okay. So let's say you've got a user in the cloud and they're sending an email to a business partner. Okay. Normally, that user in your Office 365 mailbox will go Office 365 mailbox, Exchange Online protection, MX routing to that partner. Okay. It will never come on-premises. Cloud's up here, on-premises down here. Okay. It will just go mailbox in the cloud out to the recipient. If you enable centralized mail flow, though, that outbound email to an internet address will get routed on-premises, and on-premises will send it to the internet. Okay. Now, if you've got no reason to route your email via on-premises, don't do this. Centralized mail flow is designed for the scenarios where you have some device on-premise that you must route all email through. So, for example, let's say you've got a compliance device, or I know Exchange has DLP built into it, but let's say you've got a DLP device on-premise, and all internet email must go through this device. That's where centralized email flow is for. Okay? You're routing your email, everything that's sent outbound on-premise, it will go through this third-party device, and it will go out to the internet that way. Okay? Notice that email between two cloud mailboxes is not subject to this. You know, if you put Mary and Bill up as mailboxes in the cloud and they email each other, they will email each other, the mail will stay in the cloud, it will not come on-premise. Okay. If you have a hosted third-party service, and outbound anti-spam, DLP and so on, okay, you don't need to route it on-premise to send it to there, because your third-party filters, they all know about Office 365 nowadays, and they'll all, should have anyway, they'll all have the ability to accept email from you into their service, even though it came from a shared IP address. Okay. And I've configured that for a number of people. They've got that. So you don't need to route it on-premise to send it to, you know, Enterprise Vault or Mimecast or whoever. Okay. You can route it directly to those services, and they will know it's from your domain, even though it's come out of a shared IP address environment. Okay. So you don't need centralized mail flow for that, only for when you have a device on-premise that you need to route it through. My third scenario is EOP standalone. You've bought Exchange Online protection. Okay, you've got no mailboxes in the cloud. Okay, you're just using it as a anti-spam, anti-malware filtering service, spam filtering service. Okay, it's very similar. You register your domains. You set in Office 365. You've a smaller management console, but you register them in Office 365. By default, they're set to authoritative. Okay. By default, they're set to internal relay. Okay. And remember, internal relay will send mail to your objects even if they're not in the cloud. So you can set up EOP really quickly. You turn it on, you register your domains, okay? You point your MX record at it. Okay? When the recipient, when the message arrives in Office 365, the recipient is not there. Okay? You've not uploaded any recipient details. It will come into EOP. EOP will check it for spam filter and so on. And then it will send it down the connector you have to make EOP work. Okay? It's an internal relay accepted domain. So it will accept everything and send them down. Okay? It's on premises that decides if it's a real mailbox or not. If you want to do directory sync edge blocking, in other words, you want to throw away messages up at your filter for addresses that you don't have, then you have to tell EOP what your valid email addresses are. There's a number of ways of doing that. You can upload a static address list and upload a CSV file and so on, or you can use dirsync. Again, same problem. If you have dirsync and it doesn't replicate everything, i.e. public folder, mail-enabled public folders, you have to make sure that it does. Okay, either by adding them by hand or having an internal relay. But if you have an authoritative list in EOP, you can change your accepted domain to accepted, no, sorry, to authoritative. And now EOP, as it has an authoritative list of your on-premise objects, will throw away email that does not go to an authoritative on-premise object. So your filtering of invalid recipients happens in the cloud. They don't come down on your bandwidth or anything like that. Okay. So you can do that with EOP. That's optional. You have to give it a directory to do that. Okay. You need to put some connectors in place, and there's a guide for building EOP, and that makes sure that you don't have mail looping, okay? Because otherwise it would send it to the MX record, which would go back to EOP, which would just go around in circles. Okay. So EOP routing, MX to EOP. Message arrives at Exchange Online Protection. If the users are added and you've set it to authoritative, it knows the object exists. It will send the object, it will accept the object and send it down via the connector to the object in the premises. If the object hasn't been added to EOP, accepted domain is internal relay. It will still spam filter and check it. And if it passes those checks, it will send it down to on premises. Where on premises, it may throw it away because it's an invalid recipient. Okay. The connectors by default are opportunistic TLS. You know, do TLS if you can. But again, you could do the same connectors as you have in hybrid. Indeed, you could run the hybrid mail flow to put these connectors in place. Okay. That would work as well. Okay. So it finds the connector, matches an on-premises outbound connector, matches your domain name, and will send it down to on-premises. And hopefully it's got less spam and junk and so on than it would have had if you'd gone direct to your on-premise environment. You can also do outbound filtering with EOP. Rather than sending everything, you know, star and using MX lookup, you have your star send connector and you send it to EOP. Okay? You send it to the same address you use for the MX record. So when you go live with EOP, you'll point your MX record at the EOP endpoint. You also point your send connector at the same endpoint. Okay? Exchange Online Protection knows if it's an email going outbound or if it's an email coming inbound. They can work that out. Okay, based on where the email is coming from. So if it's coming from your trusted IP address range, or preferred, it's coming from a known certificate that you hold, then it will treat it as an email going out. If it doesn't have that information, it treats it as an email coming in. Okay. Okay. So the mail gets delivered. Okay. And then outbound, a mail gets sent out to the cloud. If the email is spam, EOP will send it from an IP address range that it doesn't publish. Okay. So that if it's spam, if you're sending spam outbound, it could go onto a block list, but that block list won't block legitimate emails going out. So EOP splits good emails from bad emails and sends them. And they don't care if the bad email pool ends up on a block list, because they're only sending bad email out of it anyway. Okay. So they'll try and split the good and bad emails so that they don't have all the customers who are using their good pool of email addresses getting filtered. Okay. Final steps for an EOP migration. Make sure that you allow through your firewall access from the EOP range. The EOP range is published. I've got a link for that coming up in a few slides' time. Okay. And make sure you've got port 25 TCP inbound from that range and port 25 outbound to that range. Okay. I had a demo, but I'm not allowed port 25 outbound from these machines, so I can't show you my demo, unfortunately. Worked great on my laptop in the hotel room, I ran it as I came in here, and someone's filtering SMTP outbounds on the public network in the conference. Not that I blame them if I was running the conference network as well. I'd be blocking outbound SMTP, but it stops me doing a good demo. Okay. If EOP detects a message as spam, you've got a couple of options. One is you can throw it away. One is you could quarantine it. And the final one is you could mark it with a header and send it to on-premises anyway. When it arrives at Exchange on-premises, you can write two transport rules that will look for those headers and take those messages and put them into junk mail. Okay. So a user could have EOP, but actually their junk mail triage, they're looking through the junk mail to see if it's a false positive, happens in their mailbox, in the junk mail folder. Okay. Or you could put it into quarantine and the user could go and check their quarantine daily or every other day or whatever you want them to check. Recently, there's a bulk mail filter enabled as well. So now you can have, it will look at it and see if it's bulk or bulky or even more bulky. I don't think they're real words. Okay? But it will look and see if they are. Okay? And it will add a header saying how bulky the email is. Okay? And now you can write transport rules on premise to say, okay, well, it's a slightly slim version of a bulk email. I'll put it in the inbox. But it's quite a fat bulk email. I'm going to put it in junk mail. Okay? Beforehand, up until about a month ago, EOP got a bad rap for its bulk mail, sort of the middle mail, the mail between spam and real, you know, the sort of grey area. Okay? And every spam filter company has a different rap on how well they treat the sort of middle ground, the bulk mail ground. Okay? So now in EOP, there's effectively it's manual, okay? And coming in the future will be a slider, you know, treat this as junk, treat that as okay. But at the moment, it's PowerShell commands, and there's a recent blog post for that. Okay. And then the last thing to do, change your MX record to EOP. So a couple of hours work, really, to move to EOP. It's a relatively simple process. Okay. If you want to have mail flow independent of those specific settings that we talked about, you can customize your mail flow. Okay. Using that we've just looked at, what could we do to customize? Well, one is partners. Okay, you could take your mail flow from a business partner, and you want to make sure the business partner never ends up in junk mail. Especially important if you have quarantine and you don't get notified for a couple of days there's items in the quarantine. But equally, if you get a fair bit of junk mail, you probably don't check your junk mail very often either. Okay. EOP has a nice feature if you enable DirSync, that if you have an on-premises mailbox, which you will do because you're just using EOP, you're an on-premises mailbox, you open Outlook, you mark an email in Outlook as safe, it goes onto your Outlook safe list. Okay? Your Outlook safe list is stored in your mailbox. Every 15 minutes or thereabouts, there's an agent running an Exchange 2010 and later that checks your mailbox, looks to see if there's updates to your safe list, and writes the safe list to Active Directory. So there's an attribute, it's a hashed attribute, there's an attribute in Active Directory that contains your safe list. Well, DirSync copies attributes from the Active Directory and pushes them to the cloud. One of the attributes it copies is the safe list attribute. So EOP in the cloud knows what the user has set as safe on-premise. It's a hash, so they can't directly read it. But when an email arrives at EOP, it takes the sender of the email, hashes it, and compares the hash to the hash that's in the Azure Active Directory. If the hash is in that property, it will mark the email as safe and send it on. So the user has direct control over safe listing in the cloud spam filter, which is a rare feature. Normally, if you want to do that with a cloud filter, you have to open up some third-party management tool and monitor it. So you have an on-premise safe list that's completely separate from your cloud-based safe list. In EOP, the safe list is the same. It's a synced safe list. Okay. So with your partner, you could add your partner domain to the safe list for that for every user doing it individually. You could add the partner's domain name as a white list or an IP address. Okay. But you can also create a connector of type partner. Okay. And that allows you to do things like guaranteed TLS. You know, so I want to receive from that partner. If they stop encrypting it, I will stop receiving it. Whereas if you don't have a dedicated connector from that partner and they stop encrypting it because they've made a config change or something, then it will automatically downgrade to opportunistic TLS, and that means it will automatically downgrade to clear text. Okay. But if you're doing confidential, secure information with that partner, you may not be happy with downgrading to clear text. Okay. Recently, it's become aware there's an SSL3 bug, the Poodle issue, which you may have come across. Okay. How many people in the room have disabled SSL3 already? A handful of people. Okay. Anybody not heard of what I'm talking about? About the same number. Okay, so it's a fairly good. Okay, so Poodle is the one you want to look up. Okay, there's an issue in SSL3. The recommendation, depending on who you talk to, is to disable SSL3. Well, here's a problem when you talk about transport. Most transport over the internet for SMTP will do opportunistic TLS nowadays. Okay? It will do encryption if it can, and if it can't do encryption, it will downgrade to clear text. Imagine the scenario where you've got a customer emailing you, and they're running some mail gateway or whatever. Their mail gateway doesn't support TLS 1.1 or 1.2. It only supports SSL3. Okay? You've disabled SSL3 because of the Poodle issue. Okay? They connect to you. Your server says, I'll do TLS, and I'll do it over the TLS 1.1 and 1.2 protocol. They go, oh, I don't support that. Here's the email in clear text. So you've disabled an encryption protocol because possibly somebody might be able to hack it. The result being, all your email from that partner is now clear, which is much more risky than having actually left SSL3 in place because someone might possibly. Now all email is clear text. So that's one to watch out for with transport. Okay. Because it will downgrade and will use the best encryption algorithm. If they don't support a shared encryption algorithm, it will go clear text. Well, with a partner, you can enforce that. You say, okay, I'm going to do SSL, I'm going to do TLS. Here's the encryption levels I support. You talk to them, they'll tell you their certificates they're using, they'll tell you the IP addresses and so on. And you can build a connector that receives email for your domain from their domain with a known certificate value. Okay. And then it will guarantee, and then you can set things like don't spam filter it and stuff like that. But if the email would come across a connection that is not TLS, because it's downgraded for some reason, some config issue somewhere, the mail will queue. Okay? And that's a good safe place to be. Okay? So you can do that with a partner connector. Okay. Also, for custom mail flow, in EOP, there's a feature called conditional routing. Okay. Conditional routing involves you making two things, two objects. So you can do them both in the Exchange Control Panel. Okay. But you can route emails based on the property of the recipient, or based on any property, actually. You can route emails based on some property that is not the domain name. Okay. Normally, emails route on the domain name. You know, I'm sending an email to bob@contoso.com. It will go to the MX record published by contoso.com. I send an email to mary@fabricam.com. It will go to the MX record ultimately for fabricam.com. But what about a scenario where, let's say, I've got three offices, you know, one in London, one in Paris, and one in Barcelona. I've got EOP as my inbound point. Well, in EOP, I'd have to say where to send my emails to after they've been checked. Well, which office do I send it to? Well, with conditional routing, I can say if the attribute in Active Directory for the city says Barcelona, then use this connector. If the AD attribute in Active Directory says city equals London, use that connector. If the attribute for Paris, etc., use that connector. So you have DIRS sync in place, you push your AD up, the city attribute and a bunch of others are pushed up, okay? And in Exchange Online Protection, you write a transport rule that says if AD attribute city equals London, then use this conditional route. Okay. So you look at the graphic we've got up here, the top graphic. In the connector, there's a scope property. And you can say use criteria-based routing, CBR. Not exactly the most obvious English statement. There we go. This is what it means. You tick that. When you tick that property, it grays out the recipient domains that connector is involved with, because routing stops being domain-based. Once you've made your connector, your connectors, so you make a connector for Barcelona, London, and Paris, and you'd set the IP addresses and endpoints and so on, that's all done in the connector. You then make a transport rule that says, if such and such a property is true, then do this. And one of the targets of the transport rule will be use the connector. So you could do something like, you know, if they're based in London, use the London one. You could do things like, if the department is sales, send it here. If the first name starts with A, do this. That's a silly one. But you could do that. Okay? You could have any condition that you can pick up, and you could route the email based on that condition. Okay? And then, of course, you would also want a standard connector that routed email somewhere. It will use the conditional route first, and then it will use the connector if the property doesn't exist. So let's say you provision a new user in the directory, and you forget to write their city value in. They don't have a city value, so the rule that says, if London go here, if Barcelona go there, if Paris go there, none of those three rules are valid, then normal routing comes into play, and it will route it to one of the offices. Let's say it routes it to the Barcelona office, at which point internal mail flow will get it to where the mailbox actually is located. But you can keep traffic off your WAN by directing the traffic to the specific local environment. Okay. Connectors and site resiliency. Well, what happens if a site goes offline? How do I route? Imagine a scenario where you've got two offices, let's say New York and London, okay, and you've got EOP, and you say, OK, I want to send email to London. Okay, so you type in the London IP address into the connector, mail will go to London. The London site goes offline, okay, mail will queue. Unless you go and manually edit the IP address and point it, you know, you do some manual work. Okay? So you decide instead, okay, well, let's put in the IP address for London and the IP address for New York. Well, if you put two IP addresses into EOP, it will use them 50-50. Half your email will go to London, half your email will go to New York. There's no guarantee that the London mailboxes will end up first in London. That's what conditional routing helps you do. Okay? But SMTP has built in load balancing. You put multiple endpoints into an SMTP object in DNS, so an MX record, for example, and it will use them. So if you have a couple of MX records priority 10, it will round robin automatically. If you have a couple of MX records of different priorities, it will round robin the same priority until none respond, and then it will go up to the lower priorities. So it'll go from a 10 to a 20 priority. It will do that automatically. You don't need load balance and so on to make SMTP work. You can do, there's advantages, but you don't need it. But here's something that most people don't know with Exchange. When you fill in the endpoint in any Exchange connector, you can write in an address that is an MX record rather than an A record or an IP address. Okay. So here's an example on the screen. Okay. Let's say you are contoso.com. So you've got an MX record for contoso.com, okay, and that delivers to where to EOP or wherever you're delivering your email to. Okay. But you want to route your email to your London office 100% of the time. But if the London office goes offline, then you want to route 100% to your other office. But you don't want the scenario where it's 50-50. Or you don't want the scenario where it routes to London, London goes offline, you then have to manually change stuff to get mail flow working again. What you do is you make a MX record for a custom name. Oh, I've chose hybrid here, doesn't really matter. Okay. And I've got two priorities, 10 and 20. So in my connector, I don't deliver email to my IP address, you know, 5678. I don't deliver email to my A record, mail.contoso.com. Okay. I deliver email to hybrid.contoso.com. EOP sees that's an MX record, delivers, looks up the MX record, finds the MX record has priority, and delivers to priority 10. So 100% of my email goes to my Oxford office. My Oxford office goes offline, it will automatically go to the next priority, and we'll deliver to, in this case, Harvard. Okay. So we have load balancing geo-distributed automatically, and all we have to do is create MX records and priority. I wrote a couple of blogs about that over the couple of years. One was outbound from Exchange and having site-distributed redundancy using that idea, and earlier this year I wrote the equivalent inbound from Office 365, because Office 365 is just Exchange servers, so you can do exactly the same thing in the cloud as you can do on-premise. Okay. So it's a way of doing geo-distribution. Okay. You're ready to move people to the cloud. Okay. Need to do some testing. Okay. Oh, 10 minutes left, just checking the clock. Okay. You need to do some testing. How would you do some testing? Okay. Well, easy one is telnet port 25, connect to the endpoint. Okay. Make sure it works. Or use an SMTP test tool. There's loads of them online. So before you move any mailboxes, do things like, you know, when I'm building an Exchange server, I always put the Telnet client on an Exchange server because it's a good way of quickly testing an endpoint. Is the endpoint up? Are there firewalls in the way and stuff like that? Okay. That was the demo I was trying to do here, but there's a firewall in the way and so I can't do the demo. Okay. Create the objects that DirSync, etc. are going to make. So you've got a test mailbox on-premise, create a mail user in the cloud, or create a mailbox in the cloud, create a mail user object that matches it on-premise. We've talked earlier about the target address attributes and the SMTP addresses they would have. You can do all that manually, then you should be able to send an email to an on-premise object that routes to the cloud, even before you put dirsync and everything in place. You should be able to check all that works. Okay. It's possible to do relatively easily, so that when you put dirsync in place, when you move your first mailbox, you know Mailflow is going to work, even before you move your test mailboxes. You've tested it with pretend mailboxes. Okay? You don't then have to raise a request with the firewall team to justify some opening of ports or something that you've forgotten, or you forgot to add a safe list IP in Office 365, because you send it to the test mailbox, you look in the headers, you see it was safe listed. Okay? You can do all that before you move real people for tests. You can use things like the troubleshooting tool for Exchange, exrca.com, to send emails to these test addresses. They'll send it via MX. It should end up in your cloud mailbox, and so on. There's lots of tools for doing this. Okay? Test it, make sure it works. Okay. If it doesn't work, look in the queues on Exchange Server for ideas, for clues. Okay? It will queue somewhere, so get queue and list the last error. Things like that will help you see what's going on. Enable protocol logging on your send connectors. They'll tell you lots of info. The best one I've seen, the most common one, should we say, it's not really the best one, the most common one I've seen that gives you problems with mail flow from on-premise to the cloud is your on-premise external IP address has been added to EOP's block list. Okay? Typically happens if you're a small business and you're an ADSL connection. Okay? When you are on block lists at EOP, by default, they will not offer the start TLS verb. Okay. But if you try and do a hybrid connection to the cloud, what does it have to be? Has to be TLS, or it'll fail. Okay. But if they don't offer the start TLS verb because you're on a block list, you can't send them encrypted email. So on-premise, you'll get an email, an error saying can't send, TLS negotiation failed. Okay. Well, actually, what is good, what happens is, you send a fake email, send email, tell an SMTP test tool, you send an email. You don't need it to be TLS because it's not going through your connectors. It will hit EOP, and EOP will respond with an email saying, your email is on a block list. Please send an email to dlist@microsoft.com to take yourself off the block list. But you only get that response back if they get an email from you. If you're enforcing TLS, they won't get an email from you. So it's a catch-22. You can't send them emails. They don't receive emails, so they don't respond to you telling you you're on a block list. Okay. So if you're setting up hybrid, you want to check, just telnet to the EOP endpoint and make sure start TLS is returned in the verbs. So telnet EOP endpoint 25, hello. And it should say 250 start TLS. And you'll avoid that issue. Okay. Make sure you've got the right firewall rules in place. Okay. There's a list online. That's the EOP endpoints. Occasionally, they get updated. You want to check. First one tells you what the IP addresses are. The second one tells you recent changes to the IP address. So as of the other day, the second one was reporting that the list on the first page was last modified in July. Okay. So if you've had your firewall and you've configured EOP, let's say back in April, you might find by now there's some EOP IP addresses that you're blocking. Okay. So a regular place to connect, add it to an RSS feed or something like that to know when things are updated. Okay. Your hybrid connector will be configured to receive only from those IP addresses as well. And in terms of outbound, you send email to EOP, you use the MX record they tell you to use, tenant name or tenant-com, whatever, mail.protection.outlook.com. Okay? And it will know it's coming from an on-premise environment going to the cloud, even though that's the same value you would normally use to do your MX delivery. Okay? You're ready to change. You've moved all your mailboxes to the cloud, or maybe you're going to move your endpoint to the cloud before you move any mailboxes at all. Okay. If you're going to do it, you can do it whenever you like. You can do it before, you can do it in the middle. I know some people who do a pilot and then change the MX endpoint. Okay. If you do it before, make sure your accepted domain in Office 365 is internal relay. So any object that didn't get synced to the cloud will receive email. Okay. We talked about that scenario earlier. That's something to consider if you're going to move the MX record early. Okay. You may not have all the objects up there. If you're going to do it during a migration, so you do a pilot and then you change it, for example, okay, treat it as if you changed it beforehand. Have the accepted domain as internal relay, so the objects that are not, for some reason, in the cloud will still get delivered. If you change it after you've moved all your mailboxes, And remember, your mail-enabled public folders would fall into that. So if you change your MX endpoint after you've moved all your mailboxes and after you've done your public folder migration, okay, then you can set your accepted domain to authoritative because there should be no objects left on-premise that you need to route mail to. Okay. So you've got all your mailboxes in the cloud. You've changed your MX endpoint to Office 365. You've set it to authoritative. Office 365 will reject mail that it doesn't know exists. Okay. So it'll never turn up on-premises. Okay. I asked a bunch of MVPs and Microsoft Certified Masters, of which I'm both, so I get to speak to both groups of people. I asked them what they would do in terms of an Office 365 deployment. Would they change the MX record first or last or in the middle? And it came out about 50-50. Okay. So everyone has their preference, and there was no real way of looking. It was interesting. It didn't show me much. It was great. I know when I do it, I tend to do it near the end. Okay. But there was a whole bunch of people that said, oh, we do it first, get it out of the way. There were some people that said, do it as a pilot. Okay. So, yeah, some before, some after, a few in the middle. It was nothing definitive. So I'm not going to sit here and say you always move your endpoint at the start, always move your endpoint at the end. The guys are the best. They do both as well. Guys and girls are the best. Let me clarify that. Okay. All right. What do you use for your MX record? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5 when you move to the cloud. 2, I can hear a 2. Anyone use 3? Okay. 2 or 3 work. Okay. 2 is the preferred. Okay. What's 1 used for?
Relay.
Yeah, relay or client direct, client applications direct to the cloud or direct delivery by relay. Okay. 4 is when you had FOPI. That was the MX record for if you had FOPI before it moved to EOP. And even before FOPI, it was called Front Bridge, and so that was a valid MX record back in time. All of them will work. Okay, 1, 4, and 5 run the risk of some issues. Number 1, it could be treated it will be anonymous, so it could be treated as spam. 4 and 5 do not do geo-redundancy for EOP. When you set your EOP record, your MX record, to your tenant name, so contosio-com, mail.protection.outlook.com, it will resolve to an IP address range that's valid to the data center in which your mail servers sit. So if you've signed up to Office 365 and you're a European company, as most of you probably here are, and you've signed up with a European or African address, then your mail will be stored in an Office 365 servers, that will be located in Dublin or Amsterdam, the locations of Microsoft's data centers in Europe. If you deliver email to your tenant name, they'll tell you what value to use, .mail.protection.outlook.com, then the message will always go to an IP address range that is always Dublin or Amsterdam. If you try telnetting to your endpoint, it will always come back with, say, DB and some number, that's a Dublin server, or AM some number, that's a Dublin, an Amsterdam server. This was my demo that I can't do. Try another one, microsoft.com.mail.protection.outlook.com, and it will always be an American data center. Okay. So if you're in Europe, your mail flow from the moment it leaves the person who's sending it to you will remain within Europe. EOP will do that as long as you set your MX record to 2 or 3. Okay. 3 was the one that you got with Wave 14 of Exchange Online Protection and Office 365. So it was the Exchange 2010 version of Office 365. Okay. Still works, still routes directly, but the protection one is the one they currently tell you to use. Okay. So make sure you've got your MX record set to that, because that will ensure your mail flow stays within the continent in which you have signed up for Exchange. Okay. So you're ready to finish. Okay. You've moved all your mailboxes to the cloud. You've got your Exchange server on-premise. What do you do? Okay. Well, one of the first things you do is you shut down your firewall so that no inbound email can come via it. If your domain is accepted, authoritative in the cloud won't send you anything anyway. Turn on protocol logging on-premise on receive connectors. See if anything is trying to connect to you. You know, that photocopy or scanner or some application on-premise is probably been hard-coded to use the on-premise servers. They need to be updated. Okay. That's where, let's go back a slide, that's where the SMTP at office365.com endpoint comes into play. Okay. Or if you want to authenticate them, the tenant address. Okay. Also, if you've still got it set to internal relay, they're going to be sending it to objects that don't exist, so they may not be real emails anyway. So set it to authoritative, and that just gets rid of the invalid email addresses. Okay. Look in the logs and make sure that no one's using the server. When the logs show no traffic and you fix that issue, stop the service for a bit. When you stop the service for a bit, then decommission the server. Okay. Go through a long, drawn-out process, but make sure that mail flow is not interrupted. Okay. In the slides that you can download from the TechNet portal, there's a bunch of other stuff that I didn't have time to cover. So things like making sure your journaling works, how dirsync really works. So we talked about it being authoritative. Okay. Dirsync is on-premise mastered. You change the object on-premise. You can't change the object in the cloud. How do you deal with that? Okay. How do you move distribution groups? Because they're modified on-premise. There's a bunch of other things that are important to email, but I don't have time for in 75 minutes. Okay. So thank you all for attending. Remember, please, to attend a couple of other sessions that you can attend. I'm down on the Microsoft Solution Experience in the Dayglow Orange T-shirt all afternoon tomorrow if you want to come and chat to me about anything we've done here or anything else with Exchange. And please make sure that you fill in your evaluations, and I shall leave when I get to it. I shall leave the area, the QR code. And it'd be very appreciative if you did run the evaluation and tell the truth on that. That'd be great. All right. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of TechEd and all the resources, and have a good lunch. Thank you.